What is going on, everyone? It's your guy, Cole Jackson, back with another episode of the What the Flock postgame show. We'll be bringing you an instant analysis and breakdown of the Ravens' stress-inducing win over the Minnesota Vikings. We're looking forward to it. We're coming off a bye week. We missed you guys. We hope everyone got to enjoy some rest. Enjoy last Sunday without all these heart attacks. If you are enjoying these, if you like the post-game analysis, click the like button, hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We want to take a huge second to thank our sponsors of the What the Flock post-game show. It's our guys and gals over at Lee's Pint and Shell, located right in the heart of Baltimore. Lee's is your go-to for game day with their game day specials. Bud Light Drafts, Michelob Ultra Buckets, Modelo, and Corona Pony Buckets, and White Claw Buckets. All on special there on game day. Be sure to check them out. We'll drop their link below. And now over to my post-game co-host. It's Adam Bonacorsi. What the flock is going on, my guy?
Oh, you know, feeling real peachy today. This is the best my voice has sounded all day. You know, I before we jump into everything, Cole, definitely wanted, you know, I don't even know how to like apologize for having to kind of last minute cancel our pregame and pints today. Feels weird to apologize for something that I didn't do wrong. You know, we're an extremely careful household, and just through life ended up picking up COVID this past week. And so now we got a whole house full of it, 4 kids, 2 adults, just been quite a weekend, but wanted to be responsible about it, not drive it into anybody else's households, and decided to can it this weekend. But that being said, this isn't the end of that. This isn't we tried, didn't work out. We will be doing a few other pregame and pints is the plan. That's a lot of peas right there. We're planning more pints and pregames in the present future. So we'll be doing some more here. Again, wasn't the path we had planned this weekend. I'm just really killing these P words right now. So, you know, it is what it is, right? Unfortunate circumstances. I appreciate all the kind words from everybody, you know, out in the Twitterverse, you know, for my family. I really do. I'm just happy to be at least sitting here with my football family, with Cole, talking about the Ravens today, and a nice win.
And the Ravens gave you a reason to have some upside today, and that's really what's important. But obviously sending you and the family the best wishes. You know, I'm sure some people saw it on Twitter today. This isn't Adam's not a political person. There's nothing else that really matters. All he cares about is his family, so that's where his thoughts are. But we do not miss What the Flock postgame shows. So we are here, folks, and we have a lot to talk about. You know, I think the start of this game was that like things could have gotten out of hand really quickly. It was probably the opposite of what we all wanted to see coming off of a bye week. The Ravens have been notoriously strong under John Harbaugh off the bye week. I was expecting them to come out, you know, all firing on all cylinders. And it's, once again, it's kind of been the theme of the year: slow starts, comebacks, all that fun stuff. Opposite of fun, really. But, you know, once again, they're able to do enough to get it done and get a win. And you know, people are talking about, you know, they're 6-2, but are they really 6-2? Listen, guys, at the end of the day, you are what your record says you are. Does that mean that the Ravens are going to go in and dominate the playoffs? No, they have to play better. We know that. But getting there is half the battle. And being 6-2 at this point, with games against the Dolphins and Bears coming up, not teams that you're taking lightly, but teams that, you know, they're winnable games. You know, you got to feel good. You got to feel good. I had this marked as a win because it was coming off the bye week, but I did think the Vikings had some players that could really exploit, the weaknesses of the Ravens. And we're going to get into some of those, but, you know, I felt good. I've seen a lot of stuff about the coaching staff on there. I continue to see issues with the team, a lot of which have to do with players executing assignments. Missed tackles on special teams led to a touchdown. Missed tackle or giving up the big plays on Dalvin Cook's 66-yarder and the 50-yarder touchdown to Jefferson. It's, you know, that's the Vikings had like 330 yards, something like that, and I think 116 come off those two plays. And then you add a touchdown. It's just it's big plays that constantly keep happening. Not sure that all of it is due to guys just running wide open, which would be scheme related issues. You know, there are some scheme issues on the offense. We know that. But, you know, a lot of it comes down to failure of the offensive line. Not sure how much Greg Roman can really do there. So it's not that everyone, like, everything is fine and no one should be criticized. Absolutely, you should be critical. But firing, throwing the baby out with the bathwater doesn't fix the fundamental issues this team has had this year, in my opinion.
Nope. So a couple things. For starters, you know, your mention about, like, is this a team that's going to just, you know, run straight through the AFC in the playoffs? No, it's not. But who did we just see go down today other than Buffalo, right? Buffalo and Jacksonville game, right? Did you expect that? So when you look at it, the Ravens have lost to two teams with winning records. It's not the end of the world. Kansas City is not Kansas City. Buffalo is not Buffalo. Cincinnati, Cleveland, you name it. None of the teams that we expect to be in the playoffs are these true, you know, run away with it type teams that a lot of folks figured they would be. So while the Ravens aren't blowing open the doors against a lot of these teams, I think there's something to be said about being able to see yourself down, you know, multiple scores in the game in the second half and being able to come back and fight through that adversity to lose more players to injury. When you see Mark Andrews go down and Deshaun Elliott go down and Justin Madubuike go down at the end of that game and then it's going to overtime, your first thought is, ah, crap, you know, but they fought through it and they made it happen. So I'm always more down on this team during a game because my Twitter fingers are just faster than my brain allows me to process. And quite frankly, I don't want to sit silent through a game. It is my therapy. Twitter is my therapy, as is this show with What the Flock. So I think there's something to be said there, right? I look at the adversity of being a strength of this team right now and their ability to fight through it more than I say, well, they're blowing everybody away. If they get into a position in the playoffs, I feel more comfortable knowing I've seen them come back from these things. And I know that the teams they'll be going up against are not, you know, the not who we thought they were type teams, right? So,
well, and on that note, think about 2019 with the Ravens. They ran through everyone. And then in the playoffs, it didn't matter. It really is two different seasons. Think about the 2012 Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens limped into the playoffs, lost 4 or 5 down the stretch. I didn't even know, like, I thought that Colts game was going to be tough and they just went on a magical run. So I'm not saying that, you know, the regular season doesn't matter and that you can just ignore all of your strengths or your weaknesses and your criticisms. That's not what I'm saying. I am open to criticism. I just want it to be fair. That's really all I'm saying. And all that matters to me right now is getting wins. And, this team is doing a good job of fighting through adversity. And I think that's going to help them come the postseason.
Agree. Couldn't agree more.
And let's get right into it. So let's jump into the offense. Let's start with the man, the myth, the legend. He accounted for, 90% of their offensive yardage today. Literally. It's Lamar Jackson. He had 266 yards passing, another 121 on the ground. It felt like that throwback Ravens offense where it was like, we have to use Lamar's legs. And I've said it a number of times. I really want this run game to get away from having to use Lamar's legs. It's not that I don't want to use them. It's that I would really enjoy it if my offensive line could move bodies and we could run inside zone power duos, all these concepts consistently well so that we don't have to just rely on them. But, you know, it's a nice option to fall back on. And it seems like that was really the focus. I think he had 21 attempts, but I think quite a few of them were scrambles. But either way, it was heavy QB designed runs, and it worked. I mean, the running backs looked a lot better. They had more room. The offensive line was a lot better in the run game. I really would love to know, and this is a question that we can ask Jay-Z next time we get him on. I'd love to know what they focused on during the bye week. I'd be shocked if it wasn't the QB designed runs. But what did you think of Lamar Jackson today?
So Lamar looked great, right? And he took advantage of those runs. I will say that early on, notably in the first half, his accuracy was off. And it wasn't just the deep balls. It was the short passes, too, where he looks at Freeman in the flat and overthrows him, or he looks at Duvernay and overthrows him. I'm not picking on short guys. Just happened to be the first two that came to mind. So that was an issue, right? And I will say that I can't remember if it was Lamar or the coaches that said after the game, the halftime adjustment was taking what they were giving them because they were bringing pressure and then they were, you know, really focusing on the deep routes and they left a lot in the middle open, but the deep routes didn't have time to develop. And when they did, Lamar was throwing into tight coverage and he had to do it quickly because the pocket was closing on him pretty quick. both due to the Vikings defense and the pass rush there, but also the Ravens offensive line just not doing what we would hope from them. So with that said, the second half adjustments were fantastic by this team. I was genuinely shocked. One of the things that actually shocked me a little bit was that Lamar did not lead the team in yards per carry.
Yep.
Does that happen anymore with this backfield? Like, did you expect to come into this game and say, Devonta Freeman, 6.1 yards per carry, Lamar 5.7. It was close, but Freeman made the most of his touches. But ultimately, you know, we talk about Lamar's arm and throwing three touchdowns. They still ran it 45 times. Like, if you
– They ran so many plays. It was like 93 plays or something. I don't think it was 93 plays ran, because I don't think that counts the plays that were called back for penalty. I think they ran 86 different – 86. So that's 86. And so maybe it wasn't 93, but it was – that's a lot. Like, ask Michael Crawford – how it feels to chart that many plays, because that crazy man does it. And it's obscene. And they dominated the plays. And that was the thing. Like, after outside of those big plays, it feels like the Vikings barely moved the ball on them. I know we're going to get into the defense later, but, you know, and it was just, I don't know. It was, and we'll get right into the running backs. Like, Bell looked different. Freeman looked different. Like, they both had so much patience in the run game, but I think what it really was the run blocking. I mean, they had bodies in front of them, and they were just, what they were doing were being veterans and allowing the blocks to develop. There was that, they had the GT pull to the right where Freeman just sat behind Zeitler and
Ricard out there. No.
Yeah. It was three of them. It was Ricard, Zeitler, and I think Phillips, like just three big old boys running at you. And I was really impressed with the patience. I thought Bell ran with patience. He ran downhill, but you could see him a few times actually put his non-carrying hand on the back of the offensive lineman and just ran that block. And so that to me is just vets being vets. It does go back to what I remember Jay-Z saying when he came on. He said, you know, if they can go as far as the blocking will take them, but what stood out to me was the run blocking. But it's also, you know, guys playing patient, guys playing with vision, allowing things to happen. And it really is the concept of taking what they give you. If they're going to give you those runs, don't try and jump cut, don't try and get fancy, follow your block, keep your head down, run through contact. They did that, and I think the running backs deserve a ton of credit in this game.
Oh, I agree. And that take what they give you and that patience and methodical approach almost couldn't be any more apparent than it was on that 10-minute scoring drive. Yeah. 10-minute scoring drive. That was the one that tied the game. It was insane. But they were taking everything that was given to them on every single play. They weren't forcing bad passes. They weren't taking deep shots. The running backs weren't trying to break one off. They were being patient and letting the hole develop instead of trying to force themselves in there. And, ultimately – it felt a lot better to see that. And it feels good to know that in a pinch, Latavius Murray's out. Freeman, so I know it won't look like it on the stat sheet, 13 carries for Freeman versus 11 for Bell, but Freeman was basically the bell cow up until about the fourth quarter. No, so, absolutely. And there was fresh legs at that point in time. So then you utilize what you have. But it was nice to see that we can rely on Freeman. And once Murray comes back, I feel like this trio is good to go, right? It is what I almost hate to say. It is what it is, but it kind of is what it is when it comes to
Williams. It's not a dynamic group, right? Like, they're not going to go out there and do a ton for you. But I think if they get above average, let's say above average blocking, which I don't think is unreasonable, I think there's some potential. If guys, you know, like Bozeman and Zeitler feeling a little healthier than they were in the first half of the season, you know, getting that interior push, I thought Powers played like dog crap today, but, you know, it is what it is. He did have that. He had a pull where he pulled into the gap and there were two defenders and he took both on with both of his hands and sprung the run. So, I mean, credit him there. I just think overall he's not playing well. I think there is a very good chance that if he comes back and is healthy, they may go back to Cleveland. I don't think Phillips is going to slide inside, even if Obugie takes over at right tackle, which we don't even know. But if he does, I think they're just going to leave Phillips out and tell him to be the swing tackle this year. Maybe when Ricard comes back, but that's the problem with Phillips. It's moving him around so much. I think his biggest issue at being a Raven has been just having the opportunity to stay at one spot. And when we did see him have the opportunity, I don't care what anyone says, the film's out there. You can go back and watch it. Go back and watch the difference between week one last year and the Eagles game last year. Phillips was a completely different player after playing, you know, 5-6 games at right guard. It was completely different. And then he unfortunately had to start playing tackle again. He got hurt. Same as this year. It's just, you know, it's some of it's his own fault. Some of it's the Ravens' lack of having a tackle and having to put him out there. It's where your versatility almost hurts you because you have to play both. But, you know, a ton of things to get figured out. And then I want to take a look at the wide receivers and the tight ends. Marquise Brown playing like a number one, making big plays, making clutch catches. You know, he's using that speed to be more than just a deep threat. He's taking short catches. I don't know how much yak he had today on his 116 yards, if I 121, I don't remember. But I mean, yep. I think he might have had 65 yards of yak. Like, he looked completely fluid out there. He's looking like a guy that can be your go-to. And it's that ability to not just be a deep threat. It's run in the middle of the field, catch the ball. You know, we haven't seen the drop season a little bit, outside of a couple, you know, beyond the Lions game. We've talked that one to death, but you know, he looks good, and Duvernay's making plays. Bateman looks good. You know, the receivers look good, and, you know, I feel good about Mark Andrews. I think he got banged up, but it seems like he's okay. So the pass catchers are good to go. I think it's really about this offensive line turning it around.
No, I agree. So the pass catchers, one thing I did notice were a good handful of these comebacks that they were running today. And it was these big sweeping loops where they would catch the ball in, like, say, the 10-yard mark and almost come back 5 yards and then kick it right back upfield. But it was creating so much space in doing so. And they had the vision to see, like, there's nobody over here. So they're almost drawing defenders up and away and then utilizing the speed to cut back downfield and create that separation afterwards. You know, catch me if you can, almost, with Marquise Brown. And he was utilizing that speed well. And Bateman doing the same thing and finding the soft spot in the zone. He was fingertips away from a huge catch early on, too. One that, you know, I wouldn't call a drop, but I bet you he is probably beating himself up over it and saying, I should have had that ball. Down the right sidelines, around the down the visitor sidelines. So,
wait, are you talking about Bateman? Bateman?
Yeah,
that was a tough one. I mean,
that's what I said.
It hit his hands. It was catchable, but that getting up for that deep, you know, grabbing it and taking the contact. Too,
that was right on the tape or right on the paint there. So
it would have been a heck of a catch. I think based on the hole it hit your hands, I could see it. But you know, it's one of those. I think that's a hard catch, but you know, I
agree
though. He looked.
But you want to talk hard catches? Devin Duvernay's touchdown. Like the first, I tweeted it right away. All I could see was the Marlon Brown touchdown in the snow game against the Lakers.
100%. Yes.
The end, going over the shoulder, toe tap, and in kind of thing. It was almost, you know, other side of the goalpost, but almost an identical touchdown too. I think it was on the same. Was it on the same side of the field too? I think so.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just uncanny, you know, in a tight game late against the same opponent. And, but it was beautiful. And I'm glad to see him get involved in the offense a little bit. It was nice to see that, you know, as soon as Mark Andrews went out, they're like, all right, Tomlinson, step it up. And, you know, he has one catch on his one target. They get a bonehead penalty in there somewhere, or a hold or something. Oh, he had a hold in there. That's what it was. But I will say one thing that was a little different with Sammy Watkins out and Josh Oliver not getting involved at all. We have 1, 2, 3, pardon my counting, seven different receivers targeted today. It feels like recently the Ravens have really spread it out, 9, 10 different guys, whoever it may be. And I think it's a function, too, of only really utilizing two running backs, not three this week. I think it's a function of, again, Sammy Watkins out, Josh Oliver not being involved. Because right there's three more guys you would add to that list. So it was a little bit different than what we're used to, but it was nice to see that, again, Hollywood being called one in the clutch was always there when Lamar needed him. I think he's, you know, I feel like 3 months ago, maybe a lot of us were like, all right, well, you let him walk, right? You're not going to give him, you know, the fifth year and so on and so forth. You can't re-sign him. And now it feels like you'd be stupid not to re-sign him at this point in time, based on talent, based on report, whatever you want. It's just like, he's his guy, right? Him and Andrews. And now throw Bateman in the mix, it's just going to be a really strong unit for years to come.
Yeah, and Lamar may have been the player of the day for the offense, but huge shout out, huge honorable mention. The biggest honorable mention goes to Patrick Ricard, offensive
player. Absolutely.
Absolute freak out there. One of my favorite players on this team. What stood out to me is I remember thinking during that drive where it ended with the touchdown to Ricard, I was thinking like, this team has no, like, they just didn't have any fight in them. And then you get it to Ricard and he's fighting through tackles and, you know,
fight the whole damn offense if I have to.
It's the way he's developed his tight end skill set that has been, and I tweeted about it a while ago because with, I think it was maybe after the Chargers game where they lined him up in line, inside in line, not just as an H-back off the line of scrimmage, but as an inline tight end in the Nick Boyle role. He was smashing blocks, hitting guys, and now he's starting. Like, he makes good catches. He has good hands on the ball. His vision upfield is good. He's able to break tackles. He's developed that skill set that we all want to see out of a third tight end. No disrespect to Josh Oliver. He's still going to get – he's just got a different type of role. So right. It's nice that Ricard can kind of – you know, they got Andrews and Oliver for a little bit more of an athletic feel, and then they'll have, you know – Tomlinson / Boyle when he's back and Ricard for the heavier. I think it gives them the ability to do a lot more, right. Especially like with Boyle back, like a 22 offense that they could run with the running backs being like Freeman or whoever the running back is with Ricard, and then having Boyle and Andrews, and then out wide putting Hollywood out there. Like, the amount of things you can do with that, if you got into a hurry up, you could, you know, split Andrews out and create a mismatch because they probably put in their base defense, you know, and then you can try and spread them out and still hammer the ball because you have Ricard. Like, there's so many options, so it's super exciting. But let's get into the defense. Before we do, we have a ton of holidays coming up down there in the U.S. Not so much in Canada. Our Thanksgiving already happened. Your Thanksgiving's coming up. I always try and sneak down there for American Thanksgiving because y'all put it on Twitter and it looks so darn good. But Adam, food-wise, what do you got going on over there? Are you cooking yourself or are you going to our friends over at Lee's?
So there's a lot going on this time of year, right? Because we have Turkey Day, we have Christmas, and there's parties going on now that we can kind of get more into that. And hopefully not wind up like this. but we get more options down here, right? And I'm kind of booked up like every weekend from here through the end of the year. And the one thing I haven't really thought about yet has been New Year's Eve. But the folks over at Lee's just make it really easy. So you got a couple options there as far as they're concerned for a New Year's Eve party. And this isn't a let's pop in the bar and get a drink. They go all out and make sure you get a party out of it. So you can go either downtown to Lee's Pint and Shell. And it's $99. It's a limited 100 tickets, so it's an exclusive event. And out there in their exclusive little event, it's going to be open bar, and that's an open oyster bar and an open bar, the booze bar. And then you have hors d'oeuvres, little midnight champagne toast, some party favors, sick jams by the DJ. So they do it all up. Again, $99 and only 100 tickets total available. So make sure you go ahead and act fast. Go check out them, leespintandshell.com or their Instagram or their Twitter feed or any socials. You can go out on Facebook. If we still do a Facebook thing, they're out there. And then your option B would be, Canton's not your scene. You live up in the county up this way, maybe. Going out to Tiki Lee's and doing a very similar event. $60 up here, no cutoff on the total bodies on this one, so a little more open party environment there, and it's going to be the same deal, open bar for the booze, open bar for the oysters, champagne toast, hors d'oeuvres, you know, get yourself a little blower horn thing, little party hat, little glasses that say 2022, whatever it may be, right? Go have yourself a blast, and then I feel obligated to say drink responsibly, grab an Uber, grab a Lyft, be smart about it this holiday, but if you're looking for a place to go, Lee's Pint and Shell or Lee's or Tiki Lee's are going to be the place to be on New Year's Eve.
Love it. Love it. And the defense. So, I mean, we're talking about the same things here. It's big plays. It's missed tackles. It's the same stuff. It's, you know, I will say they did win at the line of scrimmage. I mean, when Cook turned out that 66-yarder, I think he was at 90 yards on something carries. And I think he finished with like another 8 carries for 12 yards, like something crazy like that.
I got a number for you there.
Okay, hit me with the number. Hit me with the number.
Okay, so I'll give you the overall number, right? So Cook had that 66-yard run. So he finished with 17 for 110, 6.5 average. If you take that one long run, which was not through the line, that was around the edge, they didn't set the edge on that one. They weren't able to contain him. You take that one run away, he averaged 2.75 yards a carry for the rest of the game.
But didn't he have a second long run too? It was like 20,
maybe something to that effect. Yeah.
Anyway, you get what I'm saying. So the
chunk
line
plays and nothing. Yep.
That's how it felt with Kirk Cousins. You know, when we had that third and nine, I remember being like, all right, game over. And then, you know, he did hit Jefferson underneath. But with Cousins, it really seems to be either a check down or he just isn't moving the ball downfield. So I think, you know, not that we're trying to recap the Vikings here, but it was the first time that I've really watched him closely. And I was just completely unimpressed with him on an individual level. Not that I think that's shocking news. I don't think he's, you know, that highly thought of, but it just really stood out to me. But, you know, I thought the defense did a good job of adjusting to that. You know, they played significantly better in the second half. And outside of those big plays, I mean, they really kind of kept the Vikings offense in check. So, I mean, it's good and it's bad, right? Like it's good that, you know, you saw the adjustments and you saw them, you know, forcing punts and all of that's great, but it's those big plays are still there. And those are the ones that are going to burn them when it comes playing against better teams. You know, they got, you know, the idea of keeping, you know, Nick Chubb in check twice. And they, you know, we're going to see the Bengals again and Najee Harris twice. And, you know, it's stuff like that. They just, I mean, they still have Green Bay and the Rams. Like there's a lot of tough games coming up and, you know, losing Deshaun Elliott doesn't help, but overall, what do you think? And let's start with the D line. What do you think of the defensive line after this one?
So I feel, again, you lost Justin Madubuike towards the end there. And I haven't had a chance to really dig in to see if there's been any word about that injury. I think he came back in, right? Question. He was on the sideline with his helmet two plays later. I just didn't happen to catch it because everything was kind of a blur after that.
Yeah.
Overall, I wasn't mad. I think my frustration still, at least up front, is that the pressures aren't always there. Now, Justin Ellis had a great pressure in this game, which was good to see. Hey, if you're going to get it right. You're in a reserve role. You're able to push right up through the gut and get in Cousins' face and knock him down. That's something that was not common. They still cannot get home. And it's driving me up a wall to figure out why. They kept no sacks today. None. Zero. Nothing. Outside linebackers, no blitzing, no nothing. So I would love to see, you know, we used to praise this defense as being so exotic and unpredictable, and it almost feels predictable in nature now. They can't run home, or they cannot get home with a four-man pressure. Just can't do it. Or at least, again, I said Ellis, but I think they brought five or six on that play. So it just seems like you're giving Cousins a lot of time to sit back there. Now, as far as run blocking goes, again, they set it up well today. They were able to keep everything contained. Everything up the gut was stifled. That was great to see, especially with Brandon Williams not there. Optimistic, right? There's something going on there. I'll take it. But again, I'm looking more outside of the outside linebacker when I'm complaining about pressures and ability to get home and creating havoc and forcing plays. You know, with that being said too, kind of like we said with the offense, it started one way and shifted throughout the game. And you take away those first two drives and just kind of an overall stat here, the Vikings had more yards in the first two drives of the game than they did the entire remainder of the game. I mean,
yeah.
You tell
slow
me.
Slow starts add to it, right? Like, I mean, again, it's like on the
is it a lack of preparation and great ability to adjust on the fly, or is it just being caught off guard?
I mean, it's one of those things, and I keep saying this, and it's probably because I have a coaching background, and that, it is fine. Like, I admit that's a bit of a bias, but I just don't see a lot of examples, and there were examples of this in the Raiders game, so it's not that I'm completely ignoring that it exists. There's just not a lot of examples of guys like running wide open and, you know, they hit the edge run and then they're like wide open field. Like those to me are schematic issues. If you have guys running wide open against your scheme, it's because you don't have guys in a position to make a play. I don't see that with this defense. I see a whole ton of, you know, missed opportunities, guys' inability to shed blocks, even on the special teams play. Like it's, you know, Boykin missed that block and then Tucker took a bad angle and so did Elliott. And there was that, I think it was the one big other run by Cook that was big. Brandon Stevens took a terrible angle. So it's like,
yep.
At what, like, whose fault is that? Because I just don't see how it's Wink's. So, I mean, if we want to talk about the pass rush, you know, he creates a ton of one-on-one opportunities. And this is kind of what my point is. So he blitzes. If he blitzes, they have, you know, five-man pressure against a five-man protection
or
a six-man. Who's winning a one-on-one? Nobody, it feels like. So on one hand, maybe it's that the blitz is so predictable that teams are just getting the ball out. Maybe. I don't know. It just seems like no one wins a one-on-one. It seems like we don't have a guy that can just wreck the pass rush. Like Owe was doing it a bit, but you know, he's a rookie. He's going to have up and down games. That's just the way it goes when you're a rookie. You can't rely on him to be your old pass rush. Justin Houston is getting, it feels like Yannick Ngakoue last year where he got close so many times, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many times you get close. And I'm not just talking about close to pressure. Like
Ty Stallard too, they had a couple.
Houston had like three QB hits, but it didn't feel like he had a ton of pressure, right?
No.
So it's like, I don't know. It's hard to figure out. It takes minds that are bigger and brighter than mine to figure out that defensive struggle. I just simply feel a lot of these problems come down to execution. And speaking of execution, one guy that stood out to me, Patrick Queen. Go back. If you guys didn't go back and watch the film breakdown that Mike and Denard did on the Fire Zone show on Two Guys Watching Football. I mean, it's clear as day and the film's right there. So people that just want to crap on Queen, I mean, they can show you the difference in his good and bad play. And it comes down to when he just goes. And that may sound simple. It's the definition of play speed. Play speed is your mental processing plus your athleticism. That's how you get good play speed. When he plays fast, when he, you know, has the mental processing to unlock his athletic ability, he's going to have plays like that -6, you know, tackle for a loss. It's that kind of stuff. It drives me crazy because he flashes it, you know, it's there, but he just can't consistently do it. So that's what's going to have to come. I mean, yeah, they can simplify his role and he needs to, you know, simplify his own role from the sounds of it, but you know, the potential's there and it's hard to give up on Queen. And then you have plays like today and it's like, this guy can get there, whether or not he's going to get there. I'm not saying he is, but he can get there. That's what he can be.
Yeah, I agree. So, and to that note, related, unrelated, however we want to put this, another one of those guys that's polarizing that I thought had a good game was Anthony Averett.
That was a push off.
It was
Thielen pushed off. Argue with the wall.
Thielen pushed off. I jumped on him. Averett, I jumped on early, and then I had to do the quick like tweet delete because, you know, instant reaction on that Justin Jefferson touchdown. I see Averett trailing him, and the next two guys closest were behind, and I thought that I watched him, you know, downfield taking off after him. It wasn't. There was some confusion at the line. Again, we talk about this, you know, not just winning your assignment, but actually, you know, understanding your defense, understanding your assignment. There was confusion at the line, right? You could see Marlon Humphrey looking around, chatting at the safeties, trying to figure out who's where. You know, the Vikings take off, and Justin Jefferson's downfield wide open behind Marlon Humphrey, who I believe was his man, and Averett came from across the field to try to make the play. Otherwise, and I guess you could put a Marlon in here too, the corners were much more locked down today than I expected. Again, take the push off out of the equation. I thought they played a damn good game today, and we talked earlier in the offense about Hollywood Brown having that anomaly Detroit game. We talk about it a lot, and this was kind of counter to that yet again. And it's the same thing for Averett. He had a bad game this season, and he's been very solid otherwise. You know, all the noise about Xavien Howard looking at that trade for the Ravens last week before the deadline, I think that was just, hey, there's a chance for us to get a reasonably contract, long-term
absolutely
play. You do that. I don't think it was an indictment on Averett at all. And he keeps showing up. I think they're looking at Averett saying, well, he's gone. Yeah. And, you know, we'll give him an offer and we'll do like we do with every free agent. Here's our number. Go out and get better. If we can beat it, we ask for last look on this thing. And if we can't, we wish you the best of luck. And this was kind of some future proofing. But Averett had a great game. And I really do, you know, he needs talked about because I feel like, again, you see Quaid make the big play. We talk about the injuries out there in the defense. We talk about, you know, stifling, you know, the whole second half of that offense for the Vikings there by the Ravens defense. But Averett won't get talked about, but he locked him up very well, very well. Big props to him there. Yeah, what do you think about Brandon Stevens?
I like his play in coverage. I mean, he had that nice PBU in the back of the end zone against Jefferson. I think there's been quite a few times where he's come up and run support and struggled. I think that's going to be something. If I remember the other bad one he had, it was a bad angle too. So that's kind of, that stands out to me, especially with how much they move the safeties around. They basically play them interchangeable. There's not really a true FCFSSS in this defense. No. But maybe that gives Wink a little bit of adjustment there where he's going to play Stevens a little deeper, a little bit
back
more.
There now.
I think you have to. I think you're actually going to see Ardarius Washington.
I was thinking about that today. Yep.
Why am I thinking Ardarius Stewart? Why is that name? Anyway, that name's in my head. I was like,
Ardarius Stewart.
Is that what? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. That was stuck in my head. That was all that I was thinking. I was like, that's not his name. Anyway, I think you might actually see a bit of him after, moving forward. Not just be, I think they're just going to want to give him a look and then, they can kind of rotate.
Miami's a good week to give him a look.
Yeah, and they can use him, maybe use Stevens in the dime, and then you can put Washington back, or you can put Washington in the slot in the dime. I mean, it's going to be one of those things where I think Wink does a good job and why I don't want him fired in terms of adjusting to his personnel and trying to make things a little easier. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that. The Elliott loss is big. I think he hasn't been playing quite healthy for the last few weeks. I think it showed up in his play. Kind of the story of his career in Baltimore so far. He's had a hard time staying healthy, but when he's on the field, he's very, very good. And there's no doubt about that. Maybe he opts into a cheap 1-year deal, kind of a prove it deal to get his big payday. Maybe he looks for, a longer term, cheaper deal just to get some financial security. I'm not sure. But it sucks. I love Elliott. I think he's a good player. Kind of plays, fearless, but I do think he's given up some big plays in the past few weeks, but that corresponds with him having that minor injury in one game. And he just hasn't really looked the same since. So again, kind of the whole, it's been his story, unfortunately. They've been freakish injuries. I'm not, he's not soft. He's not, whatever. It doesn't matter. No. He's just not available. And, I feel bad for the kid because I think he was playing himself into a big payday this offseason.
Oh, I agree. And, you talk about freakish injuries. He tried to tackle a fullback coming full blown, full speed down onto the ground and was his pec in his shoulder?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, how often do you see in that fullback downfield like that, like to be put in that position?
Stuff like this drives me crazy with sports. It's just it's just so tough on
the
to
first
see.
Season. It's the craziest things that happened to him, but it's been a trend, right? So you can only ignore a trend so much. And no, I don't think he's soft, and we've seen him lay the wood. So obviously it's not a soft issue, right? Yeah. It's just, unfortunately, dumb luck more than anything. And it's a physical contact sport. Like, this happens. He just happens to be on the wrong side of some of these hits, unfortunately. So it's going to be painful to lose another key element to that secondary. But hopefully the young pieces they have between what Ardarius and Brandon Stevens and Geno Stone, we can figure out how those pieces work to kind of fill the gap. And I'm sure Wink will make the best of that group there.
Yeah, and just quick summary on special teams. Guys couldn't tackle, but boy, could Justin Tucker quick kick, and you just love to see it. I mean, the guy's been automatic.
I mean, I'm pretty pissed because John Harbaugh is a special teams coach, so we should never have an error.
Yeah, guys should make – I mean, that was the thing, right? Fake punt, Geno Stone missed the tackle.
Queen came up like – we praise Queen. Queen came around that edge, and he almost was trotting to the sideline, and I was like, what the – I was angry, right? Great play before. Now you see that, and I'm like, oh, like, put some energy out there. It just, he was dead. So, yeah, but that's not on the coaching to me. That's on the players themselves, right? So
– it's just – it's a perfect example of kind of my thought. But anyway, let's wrap it up. Yep. Let us know down below what you guys think. Are you optimistic going through, pessimistic? Do you think it's the best six, or is it the worst 6-2 team? Or, what do you think? Drop a comment down below, hit like, subscribe so you can find your way back for more. We'll be back on Thursday. I'm actually kind of looking forward to the short week because I have a lot to do next weekend around the house. The office is almost ready to go, where I'm going to get all that decor up on the, I got like Ravens sign. We got Ravens canvases. I got a trophy and some replica rings coming in. We're going to make that bad boy look real good. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'm going to need a hand-drawn Scarlet picture for the Raven.
Yeah. I'll get that up there too. And Adam, my guy, feel better, buddy.
I appreciate
you
it.
And your loved ones. And, you know, like we always say, be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Peace out, everyone.